welcome to the August 4th meeting of the District of Columbia Board of Pharmacy. My name's James Appleby. I'm the Vice Chair of the Board of Pharmacy. I'm sitting in for Dr. Daphne Bernard, who has another commitment today. So I'll be sitting as the chair for our meeting. We'll go ahead and get started. First, with introductions of members of the board, and then also from the staff who are assembled. So, in so doing, I shall call the meeting to order here at 9:45 a.m. So we are now in session. Board members present?
Eddie Curry, Consumer Board Member.
Good morning. Alan Friedman, Board Member.
Emmanuel Belgard.
And staff present?
Good morning. Shauna White, Executive Director.
Corinne Barron, Health License Specialist for the Board of Pharmacy.
Derek Brooks, Investigator.
Austin Egan, Legal Intern.
Good morning, Carla Williams, Board Counsel.
In a moment, we're going to be asking our newest member of the board to say a little bit about himself. But before then, we'd also like to hear who is present in the room with us for our August meeting. So if you could just identify yourself, please, so we're aware of who's joined us today.
Good morning, Sheila Arrington,
Walgreens.
Hi, Jennifer Thomas with
Dunbar
Foundation.
Don Zalar, Public.
Clifford Wright, CVS Health.
Fran Chappelle, Pharmacy,
Supervisor
CVS Health.
Hi,
I'm
Jennifer
Student.
Who are
Pharmacy Student?
I accept all Pharmacy Students at CVS. I'm a Pharmacy Student.
Wonderful. Well, thank you all for joining us today for our meeting. As I indicated, we do have a new member of the board, a new consumer member who is joining us, Mr. Darwin Curry, who some of you have likely interacted with over the years, has stepped away from his responsibilities on the board. And just to give you a little heads up, in October, we hope you'll be able to join us for a little bit of a thank you get-together, probably at the end of the open session. We're still working out the details, but those of you who had a chance to interact with them may want to be present for the October meeting, at the end of which we'll try to say thank you to him, and if we can even sort it out, maybe have a little cake or some sort of treat to wish him well and to thank him for his service to the board. But we're delighted that we have a new consumer member, Mr. Emmanuel Belgard.
Yes.
And if you wouldn't mind, for the benefit of your new colleagues on the board, as well as for the public, do you say a few words about yourself by way of background?
Sure. Good morning, everyone. My name is Emmanuel Belgard. I moved to the district 10 years ago from Boston. I currently work for D.C. government, the Department of Housing and Community Development. So when this opportunity came along, I was very excited. I just never thought about being involved at this capacity, though I use quite a few of the pharmacies mentioned this morning from some of the reps. So I'm excited to see what's next and how I can help. So thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you for joining us. And one thing that's we always remind individuals about that, public members and individuals that come before the board, our duty is really to put in place an oversee licensure to protect the public, and your role as a public member of the Board of Pharmacy is enormously important to bring that perspective, because you in many ways represent the audience that it's our job to help protect. So thank you for stepping up as well. We do have a quorum then to conduct the meeting, and we'd like to start with item one on the agenda as presented, and that is approval of the open session meeting minutes from June 2nd. The information was provided for board members in their background packets. But we would please have a look at those and tell me if anyone would like to make a motion regarding the June 2nd.
Okay. Versus at the very end.
make a motion that the agenda for, or the minutes for, on our June 7th session be accepted.
I'll second that motion. And is there any discussion on the item? Is there consensus regarding approval of this motion?
Yes.
Board members have indicated in the affirmative. There is consensus as such. You do not have to do a roll call vote, but can vote as a body. So all those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries unanimously. Thank you. The executive director's report.
Yes, good morning, everyone. I have a lot of news to share with the licensees. So I want to start to let everyone know, currently right now, we do have 12 pharmacy technicians that are licensed in the District of Columbia. I approved some applications yesterday evening, so the number will go up after the meeting today. And just to give everyone a heads up, please, if you have technicians and they need to be licensed, please encourage to start the paperwork sooner rather than later. And I think I've been communicating this to everyone that I've talked to every chance that I've got, just because the process may take a while, and I'm assuming it will be a rush for October and November. So we are seeing an uptick in licenses, but I just want to make sure we can get as many individuals licensed in the next few months before the rush, which will probably be in late October and November, and maybe some delays due to criminal background checks. So just please encourage your staff to get licensed, and if they have any questions, they can contact our office. The stop date is November the 20th. So everyone has, all the technicians need to be licensed by November the 20th. I think November the 20th is a Sunday. So it will be that following business day, the 21st. And if you're not licensed by November the 21st, then they should not be working in the pharmacy. And just to give you a heads up, we will be out inspecting to ensure that all technicians who are working in the pharmacies are licensed. The other health professionals, the pharmaceutical detailers, we have 970. For pharmacists registered, we have 1,899. Pharmacy interns, 634. And pharmacists providing vaccinations and immunizations, 520. I know there's been a lot of questions about the prescription drug monitoring program. Even though it is a pharmaceutical control division, I will give a brief update. The prescription drug monitoring program, on October the 15th, we will go live for dispensers. Currently, we have 348 pending prescription drug monitoring registrations. Our team is approving applications as we speak. The approval process may take up to a week, and a final notice will be going to facilities August the 12th. And non-compliant dispensers will be identified, and we'll be contacting them. We will be running some type of audit toward the end of August, beginning of September. So if anyone is having any issues, please reach out to us and let us know at our doh.pdmp@dc.gov email, and also on the website. If your IT team is having issues, there is a number on there that they can contact. And that is...
Do the board members have any questions for the executive director about any of those items? Thank you very much. Next, we're going to be hearing a report from our Assistant General Counsel. Thank you. Two items, one having to do with proposed revision to the Board of Pharmacy mission statement, and then another, an update on the access to contraceptives after 2016. So, Carl?
Yes, thank you.
So this morning, I have the pleasure of deferring all my responsibilities to my intern to give the reports today. So first, we're going to go through the mission statement. This was something that the board needed to update in light of the fact that we are now registering and regulating pharmaceutical detailers. So the board asked that we revise the mission statement to reflect that. In doing so, I noticed that in the current mission statement, there's language that Austin will be explaining when he finishes handing out, that we wanted to make sure it actually reflected the intent of the board and that it wasn't just somehow an error in translation. So I will defer now to Mr. Austin Egan. If you just briefly, Austin, let them know what year you are in school and what school you're in, and then begin your presentation.
Certainly. Good morning. As said, I'm Austin Egan. I'm a second-year law student at American University, Washington College of Law. And so there are two major changes, to the current mission statement. The first being more grammatical. So as you can see, I'll just read it. So the mission of the Board of Pharmacy is to protect and improve the public health through the efficient and effective regulation of the practice of pharmacy and pharmaceutical detailers. So that kind of has a grammatical issue because practice of pharmacy and practice of pharmaceutical detailers, it should read pharmaceutical detailing because that is the practice. So that being the first revision, just for that consistency. And then through the second part, through the licensure of pharmacists, pharmaceutical detailers, pharmacy interns, and then also adding pharmacy technicians, since the Board of Pharmacy does regulate and license pharmacy technicians. So together, the final version with these changes would read, the mission of the Board of Pharmacy is to protect and improve the public health through the efficient and effective regulation of the practice of pharmacy and pharmaceutical detailing, through the licensure of pharmacists, pharmaceutical detailers, pharmacy interns, and pharmacy technicians. Is there any questions about that?
I do. Any thought about people who are detailing biologics and how they may differ from pharmaceutical people?
As much as it impacts the mission statement, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Austin wouldn't be the person to answer that.
No.
I think that would be a different discussion. We'd have to look at the definition of pharmaceutical detailing, because I remember all of those items coming up some years ago when we were defining it. I just don't remember what we decided. But we'd have to go back and look at how the scope was defined.
Just a suggestion. I think it's going to be very blurry, because there are pharmaceutical companies, there are biotech, so to speak, / pharmaceutical companies, and there are a lot of people, I think, who detail biologics to doctors and pharmacists, which may be used. So I'm not going to say that this isn't right. I'm just wondering if might want to look into the potential of expanding into those people as well, who I think are doing some of the same stuff.
So again, not the mission statement, because our charge is to license and regulate pharmaceutical detailers. Your question more goes to whether or not pharmaceutical detailing includes those
individuals. That's what you're changing it to pharmaceutical detailing.
Exactly.
Okay. So if they
as defined in the HORA. So pharmaceutical detailing is the terminology used in the code. That's why I said I believe this might have been something lost in translation, because my notes, as I dug them up for Austin to work on this, I had pharmaceutical detailing as what we discussed, but when I went through all the mission statements that have been on our agendas, I saw detailers. So I didn't know if the board had intentionally at some point discussed and said we want to use that term, or if there had just been something lost in translation. So that's why we are addressing that now. You're asking more about whether this term includes those persons, and I would have to go back and look
at it. Yeah, because I think there are going to be some people that theoretically are going to say, well, you know, I'm doing a biologic and stuff like that, so I don't have to bother with this stuff.
I think your point's well taken, but I think that it's going to come down to whether a biological is considered a drug, and if it's considered a drug, does it fit into the definition of what a detailer promotes? But in terms of the mission and the definition, the board only has oversight over those individuals that it licenses. And if biologics are not something that a detailer would promote, but some other person. The board may actually have no purview. I suspect they do because it's probably a drug, but that level of detail, well, let me not use that term. You see where I'm going? Yeah. So we may not have any oversight of that, technically speaking. My guess is it probably fits under the purview of drugs and detailers, but your point is well taken. There could be a distinction. I don't think it affects the mission statement, though.
Okay. I'm just concerned about saying you have pharma over here, you have a bio over here, and they consider themselves separate but sort of combined in a lot of ways.
Right.
Thank you. Yeah. That's what I was thinking. I just couldn't get it out. Okay, so again, we wanted to make sure that that was intentional. Because when we went back and forth, and I said, my notes were different. So I think it was to be detailing there. And then, of course, we're adding technicians. So we do have a quorum here today. We can move this forward with a vote, or if you need further discussion or deliberation.
I'll make a motion that the board accept the proposed changes has amended to the mission statement.
Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
All right, motion's been made and seconded. Is there any discussion?
I'd just like to say thank you, Carla, for identifying this. Words matter, and getting them right is important, so I appreciate your bringing this to our attention so we can.
All right, any additional discussion? All right, is there a consensus on the motion, or should we do a roll call vote?
Consensus.
See, nodding of heads indicates consensus, therefore we do not have to do a roll call vote. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
And so Austin has a PowerPoint presentation for everyone.
Morning again. So I'm just going to discuss the Access to Contraceptives Amendment Act of 2016, Bill B210707. We'll go into the bill tracking later, but this has not been enacted. This has been a bill that has been introduced to the DC Council. I want to give you an overview of what it says and the impacts thereof. So first, we'll look at the first provision. So the practice of pharmacy in HORA will now include the compounding, dispensing, and labeling of drugs and devices, including self-administered hormonal contraceptives. So this would be pill, the patch, the ring. Going further, so a licensed pharmacist may dispense self-administered hormonal contraceptives without a prescription from a physician if certified to do so by the board and pursuant to a written protocol established by the board and Board of Medicine. I break that down. So before pharmacists can dispense the self-administered hormonal contraceptives, they first have to acquire certification from the Board of Pharmacy to do so, to dispense the self-administered hormonal contraceptives without a prescription. I'm going to use the term contraceptives throughout the presentation, but understand that this is only limited to self-administered hormonal contraceptives, the pill, the patch, the ring. I just didn't want to say that entire long thing every single time. But understand no other contraceptive methods are being covered at all in this legislation.
Can I say that one more time, please? What you just said, repeat that?
Yes. So I'm just going to refer to self-administered hormonal contraceptives as contraceptives for the rest of this presentation, just for clarity. But this bill only covers this. It doesn't cover all contraceptives.
Just self.
Just these. Yes. So once a pharmacist is certified by the board, he or she must follow the written protocol that is determined by the boards of pharmacy and medicine. The statute goes on to tell us what exactly that protocol should require. So the standardized procedure or protocol shall require the following: that the patient use a self-screening tool that will identify patient risk factors for the use of self-administered hormonal contraceptives based on the current United States Medical Eligibility Criteria, USMEC, for contraceptive use developed by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, And two, that the pharmacist refer the patient to the patient's primary care provider, or if the patient is not a primary care provider, to a nearby clinic upon dispensing self-administered hormonal contraceptives pursuant to this subdivision, or if it is determined that the use of self-administered hormonal contraceptives is not recommended. Adjust it a little bit. So the patients, upon coming to the pharmacy and seeing a pharmacist who is licensed to dispense the contraceptives, they have to utilize a self-screening tool. I have an example on the next slide to see what that might look like, based on the current US MEC, that will identify patient risk factors for using hormonal contraceptives. So the pharmacist will then take this self-screening tool and either decide to dispense the contraceptives or determine that they're not recommended. Regardless if they are dispensed or not recommended, the pharmacist is required to refer the patient to that patient's primary care physician or to a nearby clinic if the patient has no primary care physician. So this is an example of California's screening tool. Currently, California and Oregon are the only other jurisdictions in the United States that have similar legislation. So this is just an example of California's screening tool. I'll just read off of a few of the questions. Like number four, do you smoke cigarettes? Number six, have you given birth within the past 6 weeks? Number 10, do you have high blood pressure, hypertension, or high cholesterol? Screening tool continued. Number 16, do you have or have you ever had breast cancer? 19, do you take medication procedures, tuberculosis, fungal infections, or HIV? So just an overview, trying to get patient history, medical history. As it's written in the statute, all of this is self-reported. So none of this would be required to draw records from a physician or have any of these things be tested or verified in its current stage. Okay, the next provision. The board, being the Board of Pharmacy, and the Board of Medicine, in consultation with the American Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, shall jointly develop and promulgate regulations to implement the provisions of this subsection by October 1st, 2017. So breaking down all the things that the Board of Pharmacy would have to do. They would have to develop the certification allowing pharmacists to dispense the contraception or contraceptives without a prescription. They'd have to create the written protocol for contraception dispensation. They'd have to create the patient self-screening tool based on the current US MEC. And then they would have to do all these things, jointly develop and promulgate regulations with the Board of Medicine in consultation with the American Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. So one thing that's kind of unique about this bill, and it might be changed because it is so unique, is that it gives the promulgation power to directly to the Board of Pharmacy and the Board of Medicine, when normally the boards might draft the regulations, but it's really the Director of Health who is the promulgating body. So that was one thing that was discussed at the hearing, which I'll get to towards the end. And that is kind of an interesting part of the bill. And then obviously in its current form, the regulations would have to be promulgated by October 1st of next year. Okay, provision five. Any individual health plan or group health plan, health insurer offering health insurance coverage for prescription drugs, and health insurance coverage through Medicaid shall cover self-administered hormonal contraceptive dispensed by a pharmacist. The section shall not otherwise be construed to require additional coverage for contraceptives that are not covered under the health benefit plan. So basically, these self-administered hormonal contraceptives must be covered by Medicaid, and insurance is applied to prescription contraceptives covered in a different legislation. So it must be covered by insurance. Okay, so I kind of want to give an overview of what this would look like in real life if it was, if this bill was passed as is. So we have our patient here who decides that they are not ready for children right now. So the patient would go to the pharmacy and to a pharmacist who is certified to dispense the contraceptives. The patient would use the self-screening tool, which the pharmacist would then read over. Then the pharmacist would decide to either dispense up to a 12-month supply, which is current under current legislation, or decide not to recommend. Now, regardless whether it is dispensed or not recommended, the pharmacist is still going to write a referral to the patient's primary care physician or to a nearby clinic. And then the patient will leave with the referral and the contraceptives if they were dispensed. So just quick going through what exactly is this bill amending if it were passed. So it would amend the District of Columbia Health Occupations Revision Act as it related to the practice of pharmacy, certification of pharmacists, and duties of the Board of Pharmacy. And it would also impact the Women's Health and Cancer Rights Federal Law Conformity Act of 2000. This was an act of legislation that required insurers and Medicaid to provide coverage and notice of coverage for mastectomies and hormone replacement therapy, which was amended by the Access to Contraceptives Amendment Act of 2015, which also includes that health insurers and Medicaid cover up to a 12-month supply of prescription contraceptives at one dispensation. So this is enacted, but it won't take effect until January 1st. So that's where I pulled the up to 12 months worth of contraceptives from the Amendment Act of 2015. So it amends the 2015 Act, which amends the Women's Health, et cetera, Act of 2000. So bill tracking, the progress that has been made thus far. So this bill was introduced to the DC Council and referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services on April 19th, 2016. A few weeks ago, on July 13th, the committee held a public hearing on the bill. And at the beginning and the end of the hearing, Council Member Alexander indicated the bill likely needs significant work or changes before moving forward. So it is likely that this version that I've just presented might have changes. So I guess we'll see what happens, how it's amended, if it's amended, and if it's passed. Okay, I know I threw a lot at you, so do you have any questions about the act?
I have a couple questions. Thank you for that information. Very, very interesting. And I like the idea that the council is certainly looking at ways to take advantage of pharmacist expertise and potentially expand opportunities to provide access for care. My questions are around the referral piece primarily. So thinking about patients who may not have primary care physicians and how that's going to work in terms of the referral, is the referral provided to a physician, or is the referral provided to a patient, and the assumption is that the patient would then go to a physician?
The latter. As it's written, the referral is to the patient to see their PCP or to a nearby clinic.
So, again, assuming that there may be a certain number of patients that don't have a PCP, I guess the pharmacist would have to have names of clinics that are close by and trust that the patient would go there, because, again, the referral is not being made directly to the clinic or the PCP, but to the patient,
right,
to undertake care. Okay. And then do you know who the sponsor of the bill is?
McDuffie.
McDuffie?
Yeah, I think so.
Did Councilmember Alexander indicate any specifics related to what needed to be worked up? Did she share any concerns?
One of her concerns was this seemed to, since there's already collaborative practice in the District of Columbia and there's lots of provisions that ensure that people under 18 can still get access to contraceptives, she wasn't confident how necessary this was, especially after the director of the Department of Health's testimony that this is pulling people out of seeing their primary care physician because they won't need them under this new bill. So these regular health screenings, like if a patient has to get contraceptives once a year, that might be incentive to go to a clinic, see a doctor, or go to their primary care physician to get that prescription, and now we're removing that, so we're afraid we're not going to catch other health issues because that's no longer a step in the process.
Yeah, so that's a very interesting argument. I'm thinking about what it took to bring collaborative practice to the forefront. A pharmacy practice years ago, when that sort of turf war between medicine, pharmacy, and nursing, and not wanting to give up the business because there is the financial impact as well. As you mentioned, there are a couple states that are progressive that they're doing this. I was thinking about the ability to manage this under a collaborative arrangement, but I think that's limiting in terms of, from a practical standpoint, the number of pharmacists that could participate or would participate. This opens the avenue more, as currently stated. But I do think the point's well taken about potentially missing other health risk by going through simply a self-assessment rather than a professional assessment. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes. So thank you.
So when the director of the Department of Health testified, did she propose anything regarding the 12-month?
Yes, so there's a few proposals, one being that utilization of the self-screening tool, getting the contraceptives, but if it's the first dispensation, that it only be for a 3-month supply, and then in that 3 months, the patient would have to go to a clinic or a primary care physician in order to receive the remaining 9 months. Number one, the first concern is if that method doesn't work for them and they have 12 months of it, they can't return the contraceptives,
right,
and then health insurance already covered, you know, someone for the year. And also just to make sure that patients aren't checking all the boxes and with all this unverified information. That way a doctor would take blood pressure, might have a file, or would be able to verify this information to ensure that it is truly safe for that patient to receive the hormonal contraceptives.
Yeah, those were some of the concerns for the access to contraceptives as well, even thinking about the potential for fraud or diverting.
Yes, what about the morning after pill? Would that be covered in that?
I
thought that was the prescription. Thank you.
For the self-assessment checklist, there's a lot of yes or no questions. Are there ones that trigger some concerns that will also be listed on that checklist? I know when you, the ones that you showed up, you said yes or no. I didn't know if I answered yes to some of them and no to some, is that something that's going to trigger some concern from the pharmacists as they interact with patients?
Well, as it's written now, it seems like that would be up to the promulgating body to determine that, since they are in charge of creating the self-screening tool and the protocol. They could say, oh, if they answered yes to this question, then they need to explain this, or this needs to, pharmacists need to be aware that these are their concerns.
It's a wonderful question. I would imagine that the screening tool is to bring additional information to the attention of the pharmacist, and at that point, professional judgment enters in. I don't think it's going to be a situation where if you've answered no to three or more of these, you can have it or can't have it. It's more to identify issues, because inside each one of those questions, there could be the need for some additional information that the pharmacist would then probe on to say, oh, wait, and given this additional information, instead of dispensing, I will refer you. So, but it's a great question, but there will be pharmacy professional judgment will have to intervene.
Sheila?
Yes,
sir.
I don't know if
sorry.
I wanted the board to go first. That ties right into my other question, but one was with the screening tool, and you answered my question about professional judgment. So my follow-up question to that, when you guys do the program to certify pharmacists, will there be some type of training incorporated to give them background or updated on professional judgment so they have more information when they see those questions?
It's a great question. I think the answer is it remains to be determined. We have to sort of get there, but certainly went forward the way it is now, we would have to be thoughtful about all those elements that could be included in an appropriate training program. It's pretty broad right now.
So if the board were creating, the board and working in collaboration with the Board of Medicine would create the regulations similarly to what we're doing for collaborative practice, we could incorporate a component that addressed appropriate training. Because I mean, that's a great point. And then the other question along those lines is, was there any language about liability in the legislation?
No, not in the legislation.
Okay.
That is an interesting question.
And my other question, the definition of clinic, is that any clinic where a practitioner that can prescribe birth control, was that acceptable as clinic? Because you have urgent care, walk-in, there are lots of things that have the title clinic. So I was just wondering if that would be explained.
I don't think it was defined in the legislation, so we probably have to address it in the regs.
Do you have any idea, the legislation you said that's going, was it enacted legislation in Oregon and in California?
Yes, it's enacted legislation and they already have their regulations promulgated.
Has that been going on for a while there? Or?
I think the regulations have been promulgated within the last few years. I think I know California updated their legislation effective like earlier this year, and so they have to have their regulations to catch up with the new regulations. Oregon, I'm pretty sure their regulations have been promulgated for about 2 years. Give me a year on either side. That might not be exact.
So there are some folks with experience that we can draw on too.
Yes, certainly.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Very much. That was very
helpful. And that concludes my report.
Well delegated, Carl.
Let me just say, what a blessing it is to have you here as an legal intern to help us dig into this issue. It's complicated, and the way you laid it out was very understandable. So,
thank you.
I hope you're enjoying your experience here.
I am. I'm not just saying that because Carla's right there.
Okay, we'll moving on to the next item on our agenda. We're going to get updates from the Legislative and Regulatory Subcommittee, perhaps. Alan, is there anything you want to update us on as it relates to collaborative practice?
Well, my report is that we don't have a report. We did have a meeting scheduled to put the finishing touches on the collaborative practice regulations, but admittedly I was very sick and couldn't attend, and the committee apparently opted to defer the meeting. So we'll hope to schedule that between now and then at the next public session, be able to share what the recommendations are for the full board's consideration and then move that along. I think I heard, as I was looking through the agenda, some conversation about Board of Medicine and collaborative practice.
Right, so I followed up with the Board of Medicine's executive director, Mr. Frank Meyer. So he is ready, the Board of Medicine is ready to work with us. So as soon as we have the finalized draft approved by the Board of Pharmacy, we can definitely send that over to the Board of Medicine. They didn't have any additional comments.
Good. So that's good. Yeah, so we'll go ahead and the way it'll work is that we'll put the finishing touches, we'll bring it to the full board with our recommendations, ask for the board's approval, additional comments, obviously, and then at that point we'll want to take it to the Board of Medicine, and whether they will take it under advisement in front of their full board or whether they would prefer that the subcommittee, which is made up of representatives of the Board of Pharmacy and Board of Medicine, get together and hammer out any issues. We can go either way on that, but I would hope that once it sails through Board of Pharmacy, it moves fairly quick, but we want to give our colleagues on the medicine side, obviously ample time to deliberate as well. Okay?
Next item is a report of the Communications Subcommittee. I don't know, Dr. Bernard's the chair of that, right? So I guess we'll not have a report for that.
So can I ask a question about that just for follow-up when Dr. Bernard returns? So we heard about the great work happening on the pharmacy technician registration side, and I'm glad things are moving forward. I think we previously spoke about how valuable it would be to have communications to our stakeholders in the community, and I think we talked to about an email blast going out to all pharmacists, to pharmacy organizations, so that we make sure that those individuals who are currently working as technicians get the message. So I was just curious as to what the plan is for that, because I think more people will probably register if they hear about it.
Right. So we did send initial communication out to all of our pharmacies, and we sent communication out to pharmacists. So we do plan to follow up with additional notice.
So I know for the prescription drug monitoring program, as licensed pharmacists in the district, we got something in the mail about that. Will we be getting something similar as a licensed pharmacist about technician registration? I don't remember seeing anything as a pharmacist. So did it go out on email?
We sent it out email.
Okay.
So I can see if we can send out the mailer, but email is the fastest way to
and
get
less
something
costly,
out.
I imagine.
And it definitely is less costly than the mailing out. And we did send it to all of the facilities, individual pharmacies. So if your facility is licensed, we faxed it out. So we made some individual emails as well to supervisors and to other stakeholders to get the word out.
Great.
So we are, when we're visiting these facilities, we are informing them as well.
Great. I know there's a concern about the last minute, and I don't want their pressure to be put on, those people that are actually going to be, from the staff standpoint, trying to move this forward. So I just feel like whatever proactive steps we can take to communicate to those that are going to be impacted, the sooner the better, and it makes it easier for everybody involved.
Right, and then we also had, we called all of the pharmacies in the city that we licensed. We had phone calls to all of the facilities. So we are trying to reach out different methods. So if you do hear of someone saying they haven't received any type of notice via phone call or email, please let us know.
Okay.
We definitely are trying to get that information out through different avenues.
Great. Thank you.
And if anyone from the public has not received a notice via email or phone call or knows someone who doesn't, please let us know, because we may have the wrong information as far as phone number and email. So if you need additional information or need to update some information, please let our office know.
I'm not sure if this is a question or not. We've run into, of Walgreens, we've run into a bit of a problem in that in the way it's written, if they go through an approved pharmacy training program, there is a certain number of hours to be met. And speaking with our support office, who's also reached out to some other pharmacy chains in the National Association of Chain Drug Stores, we're unable to find how do we apply to get our training program approved.
Right, and we're working on that as well. So as soon as we finalize those details, we'll send something out. However, if your technicians have been working there and can get grandfathered in,
we have some up because they're not been there that 2 years yet.
Okay,
so they can't be grandfathered in yet because of the nature of the turnover in retail.
Okay. So we're working to get that approved. If you have any communication, please send that to us sooner rather than later. And that way we'll work with you to try and get your program approved and move forward? Because I'm sure Walgreens isn't the only chain.
Yes, the majority of them. We have more technicians that will need to go through the program than those that are already PTCD certified or will fall in the grandfather clause.
Okay, and do you have the information from your training program as far as the course information?
Yes, we have all of that. We just want to figure out how to submit it.
Okay, so we can work with you to get that submitted sooner rather than later.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So I have a question. If they register as the trainee, though, does that help them or not while they're going through the program?
They can register as a trainee, but I think just to clarify your question, you're referring to individuals who've already been working. They just haven't maybe been working for 2 years. Is that
right? So they have to complete an approved training program.
But the question: can they technically speaking, could they register as a trainee before the training program is approved? Because like if theoretically the program wasn't approved, they're really not a trainee. So it's which comes before which?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm assuming none of these folks can reciprocate.
Correct.
Right.
That's the majority of ours.
And we're in the kind of Safeway. We just want to contact to see what we can get our program approved. It's already approved in Maryland and Virginia. We just need it over in D.C.
So if anyone else needs their training program approved, please reach out to us sooner rather than later. So if there's any issues, we can resolve them on the front end and not the back end, because November 21st is on the Sunday. Everyone needs to be registered. So let's try and work together sooner rather than later.
I just want to add to that. I don't, as licensees, you may be aware of it, but it does take a while to get through the process, especially when you have to do the criminal background check. If anyone lives in Virginia, that's what automatically another month.
Right. That's the state that takes the longest.
Right. So I think Virginia CDCs take like a month to get back, and there's nothing we'll be able to do. They just won't be able to go to work while they're waiting for their CDCs to be approved. If there are any issues, they may be asked to come and meet with the board. That's going to kick it out another month. So November sounds like it's far away, but it's really not. That August, you're really already running up against the time limit at this point.
And that's why we're so concerned.
Yes.
Right. And if you want to encourage individuals to go ahead and start submitting the paperwork, if we have the application in, because if it's something that we're just waiting for something to check off, then we can just check that off and move it forward. But like, for instance, your technicians that may need to get the training course approved, if they can still go ahead and submit the application. It just will be incomplete. But once we finalize with your training program approved, we can move them forward instead of waiting to start the whole process at that time. Because if they live in Virginia, per se, in a criminal background check, or if it's an issue with the criminal background check or something is not matching up, it may be an issue that needs to come before the board. And what seemed like a process which would take a month may end up taking a few months. So you can go ahead and just have them go ahead and start submitting that application, and then we'll try and definitely work as fast as possible to get the program approved.
Thank you. Thanks for that additional information. We know it's a change. The good news is once we sort of get past this hurdle, in place, and hopefully all your existing systems and procedures for onboarding new technicians will enable everyone to sort of keep up on an ongoing basis. But we recognize it's a little bit of an extra hurdle right now, and as you can tell from the discussion, staff stands ready to help out and make sure that everyone can be successful as we come up against that November deadline. With that, we move on to comments from the public. Anyone who has any comments they would like to bring to the board, this is your opportunity. If you would just merely, again, identify yourself and share your comments with us, that'd be great. It's not a requirement, but we're a very open sort of board here, so we want to make sure you know we do welcome your input. So. Anyone have anything for us today?
Sorry, dominating today. And I know this was addressed before, but we're coming up into flu shot season again, and a lot of companies, including Walgreens, have a campaign now to do additional vaccines with flu shot when we have the patients in the personal health rooms. The way the registration legislation, I don't know the legal term for it, is written now, there are certain vaccines that are not included, that are not specifically spelled out. So I was just wondering, was there going to be any further communication or maybe an FAQ or something on the vaccines specifically that are approved to be administered by pharmacists in the District of Columbia?
So there's not a limit. It's just a matter of whether or not it's in your protocol from the physician.
Yes, but the way it's written, it lists certain vaccines, but other vaccines are not listed by vaccine type.
So that was done for, I guess, certain ones that could be kind of like a group type of protocol, but individual ones can be put on. So whoever your physician is that you work with, if there's something that you want to be able to administer that's not on that particular list, you can still have a protocol for that. It would just need to be an additional.
So I'll add to that that when the regulations were last revised in conjunction with the Board of Medicine, they were broadened to enable the administration of the vast majority of commonly administered vaccines. I believe the one area where there was a preference by the Board of Medicine is that we not include the vaccines that fall under the category of travel vaccines. Thinking was there are, if we were in rural North Dakota, that might make sense, but in Washington, D.C., there are numerous opportunities for individuals to access travel vaccine-related services here in D.C., and the sense of the Board of Medicine was that let's leave that out of this update to the regulations. So, but as Carla said, it does not prevent you with an individual physician who agrees to have you do that, entering into such an agreement for those additional vaccines. If you go back and read it, it's still possible, but it doesn't fall under the blanket arrangement that the regulations cover. There's sort of a carve-out for that, but it requires an additional step on your part. But it's I think it's pretty well spelled out in the regulations. If you have questions about it, Carla is ready to help you navigate that, because it could be a little confusing, but there's nothing to prevent you, but it requires additional work on your part. Hopefully that's clear
yes,
for everybody.
Right.
So you basically have to have a separate collaborative practice agreement, in other words, right? Pretty much
yes.
That position.
Essentially, yes.
Right,
that collaborative practice agreement, you mean protocol?
Yeah, protocol, exactly.
Okay,
sorry.
I just wanted to make sure
that
protocol. Was clear.
Yes. Separate protocol.
Thank you for that
yeah.
clarification. Yeah.
The right legal term. Mm-hmm. So quickly, I guess I had a quick question about the PMP, and I'm sorry I was a little bit late. With the regards to the PMP, that's another 2 years before it actually becomes law, right?
No, the prescription drug monitoring program?
No. It goes live, but in terms of requirements to actually have the pharmacist be registered, is there a time period of that?
Are you talking about pharmacists or pharmacies? I couldn't hear. So the
Pharmacist.
So pharmacists, they can get access. They'll be able to access the system October the 19th.
Okay.
So we have information. I'm sorry, I can't see.
Okay.
We have information on our website. I'll just stand up because I feel like I can't see. We have information on our website with the dates and the timeline. So all pharmacies will start reporting August the 15th into the system.
Okay.
And our vendor is Abris. So if your pharmacies need additional information, I'm sure someone at your corporate office is already setting.
I'm presenting the same vendor we use for Maryland anyway, so it's the same vendor.
So okay,
yeah.
So it's the same thing. So they just have to go in and click a button. But we'll start reporting the pharmacies the 15th. So we've already got about 340 applications for people to go to access the system. So we're approving them as we speak today. So it may take about a week to approve. So just make sure the applications are in. As far as the, I want to make sure it works, because as far as pharmacists being able to access the system and physicians being able to access the information in the system, that will be October the 19th. And it's information on the website as well. I'm not sure if the presentation is up on the website that we did at our previous meeting.
Yes, and I have that.
You have that? Okay. But if you have any additional questions,
and it's voluntary, correct? Pharmacist is voluntary, correct?
Okay, so two things. So the pharmacy has to report. That's mandatory. Whether the pharmacist decides to look in the system, that is voluntary. I just want to kind of make it clear. clear, because sometimes people equate the actual facility being able to do something with the healthcare practitioner.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions, comments from the public? Well, then I need some help from a board member at this stage. As you may recall, in order to comply with chapter and verse, Open Meetings Act, there's a very special statement that needs to be read in the form of a motion that will result in the adjournment of the open session. It's on your materials there. Perhaps we will begin taking turns at each board meeting about who gets the privilege of closing the open session. But it is stated there, and perhaps I could invite someone to make a motion.
I'll make a motion. Mr. Chairman, I move that the board close the open public session portion of the meeting and move into the closed executive session portion of the meeting pursuant to DC Official Code 2-575B for the following purposes: to discuss disciplinary matters pursuant to 2-575B9, to seek the advice of counsel to the board, to preserve the attorney-client privilege, or to approve settlement agreements pursuant to 2-575B4. And to plan, discuss, or hear reports concerning ongoing or planned investigations pursuant to 2-575B14.
Thank you, Alan. Well stated. is there a second to that motion?
I'll second.
Mr. Curry, for seconding that motion. Any discussion of the motion? And is there a general consensus of support for that? Thank you very much. They're reminded that indeed this requires a roll call, so each member of the board will be asked to state their name and indicate whether they how they're voting on the motion. So at this stage, may I ask Mr. Curry to start the voting on the motion?
Affirmative.
Mm-hmm. Eddie Curry, affirmative.
Alan Friedman, I approve.
James Appleby, I also approve the motion as stated. If it passes unanimously, so the motion is accepted. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the public open session. The board will now move into the closed executive session portion of the meeting. Pursuant to DC Official Code 2-57B, for the reasons set forth in the motion, the open session meeting has adjourned at 10:43, and we invite all of you to join us again on Thursday, October the 6th, for the next meeting in open session of the DC Board of Pharmacy. Thank you.
I noticed that too.
Those were some detail oriented.